This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, where we talk about the biggest stories from across Texas. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline here at Texas Scorecard. I'm Brandon Waltons, managing editor of Texas Scorecard. I'm going to be joined today with Jeremy Kitchen, our Capitol correspondent, to talk about pretty much the big issue from this week, which was, of course, the Texas House debating the nearly $250 billion budget yesterday. They went through basically an all-day debate. You had several amendments, lots of things to talk about there. But first, I want to let you know, if you're watching this live, please feel free to drop any questions or comments down there, and we'll try to get to those at the end of the show. But Jeremy, you watched all of the budget debate. I think it went for about 12 hours or so. Not as late as it usually goes. I mean, how did this budget debate last night compare to years prior?
So, yes, 12 hours is still a lengthy period of time, but I think comparatively to previous sessions, it's short, surprisingly, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that, this is pure speculation, but seemingly based on how amendments were being withdrawn or rolled out, is that a lot of those things were just orchestrated behind the scenes, outside of public view. I think you and Michael spoke about that on yesterday's live stream, and it's true, you could see that where there'd be a lot of time in between amendments or in between a point of order that was called, where things were just being negotiated seemingly between, you know, factions, whatever those may be. Things were obviously pre-orchestrated on several of the key issues I'm sure we'll get to a little bit later, you know, to where like they had decided what was going to be brought up and not going to be brought up, you know, and that factors into how much time is actually spent debating, right, these things between members and getting consequential record votes, which seemingly right. There weren't that many of.
If you didn't catch any of our live stream yesterday as we went through that 12 hours, first of all, don't necessarily blame me. It was a pretty long, lengthy debate. I don't know if maybe stuck the whole time out. I'd love to know. But when we're talking about the budget, this is the House taking up this $250 billion biennial budget for 2022 in 2023.
Right.
And of course, the Appropriations Committee had already sort of written their version of what that was going to look like. But part of the process is taking it to the floor where members get the opportunity to propose any tweaks, any amendments essentially they want to that budget in an effort to try to shape the policy. And even though we're talking about the budget, we talked about this several times yesterday as we were watching it together. You know, it's numbers, it's dollars, it's cents, but also there are some interesting policy discussions that can arise as well. And you really saw some pretty significant budget amendments, and I want to talk about several of those with you. The first one, which is pretty big, but possibly not as big as you might think, and we'll explain that a little bit, was some defunding from corporate welfare. State Representative Brian Slayton, a freshman, had an amendment that actually removed $100 million from the Texas Enterprise Fund, zeroed it out. That's the deal-closing corporate welfare sort of slush fund that gives money to companies from out of state to move to Texas, and instead moved that money towards the Property Tax Relief Fund. Similarly, we saw an amendment by State Representative Tony Tinderholt, which defunded the film subsidies that Texas gives out and instead moved it to teacher retirement. Those two amendments, I mean, pretty interesting that they got on, and they got on without any debate or record vote from the members.
What that tells me, of course, this is purely, you know, speculation, but generally what that tells me is that because those amendments were pre-filed, they were kind of negotiated behind the scenes and said, okay, you know, we'll let this happen if something else happens. What's unknown, and I assume this is kind of what you're getting at, is whether or not these things and the things we'll talk about survive the conference committee, right?
Right. So after the Texas House approves its budget, and the Senate already did that, the next step is that this goes to conference committee, mm-hmm. as you alluded to. And the question is, are those items going to survive, or did they just approve them now with the intention of throwing it out later? As we noted in an article at TexasScorecard.com yesterday, back in 2017, we saw this exact same strategy mm-hmm. pulled where an amendment to defund the Texas Enterprise Fund was quickly approved without much debate or talk or even a record vote. And then, of course, that money was later put back in later on in the process, mm-hmm. kind of behind closed doors. So is that something we expect to see happen this time?
It's unknown, but it's possible, right? I think the most important takeaway for those that maybe haven't fully kind of paid attention to the budget process before is that, you know, a lot of this obviously was kind of predestined, not necessarily the amendments, but leading up to this. It's a two-year process, right? Mm-hmm. Like crafting the budget. And the real debate, if you will, happens not only before it reaches both floors, but also in the conference committee, which is comprised of 10 people, right? Five people from the House, five people from the Senate. Normally, it's the subcommittee chairman mm-hmm. of the Appropriations Committee in the House, the Finance Committee in the Senate. And they get, you know, motions to instruct from other members on like what other members would prefer to see in there. But generally speaking, they keep the budget, right, the way that they recommended it coming out of their mm-hmm. their committees, you know. And so not all the time, right, but a lot of times what happens is the amendments that are accepted end up getting stripped out. And then here you are, by the time the conference committee report comes out towards the end of session, you know, members generally will unanimously adopt the conference committee report because here it is, the end of session. It's the one thing they're constitutionally bound to do mm-hmm. and accomplish, you know, and they're trying to get out of there. So
makes sense. We had some other big amendments as well. Some of them actually didn't end up making it all the way. One of those was an amendment by State Representative Jeff Kaysen, another freshman, that would have taken $600,000 away from the Board of Geoscientists, okay, would have zeroed out the Board of Geoscientists and moved it instead to provide bulletproof vests for cops, for police. Now, it's important to note about this Board of Geoscientists, if you haven't heard of it, well, a lot of people haven't, right?
Sure.
This was actually an agency that just 2 years ago was recommended by the Sunset Board that reviews every 10 years state agencies to see what changes they need to make or if they even need to continue. And they said that their work was essentially redundant. We didn't need this board. Well, that ultimately went to a vote and the members disagreed.
That's right. Yeah, it's not every day that the Sunset Commission recommends the abolishment or getting rid of an agency. They, of course, did that last session. The legislature said, no, we still need it. They kept it. And I think you saw an effort by Representative Kaysen there to, you know, kind of follow through with what the Sunset Commission recommended, get rid of bureaucracy, right? And they, again, said no to that.
Wow, absolutely amazing. But, of course, at least on that one, we've got the record vote. I mean, we said there were not very many record votes last night at all.
That's right.
There were like maybe 10 or less.
Right.
So very few opportunities for lawmakers to actually go on the record. And so Jeff Kaysen provided one such opportunity there. Another amendment that was actually accepted and adopted without much debate or discussion was a good one from State Representative Kyle Biederman out of Fredericksburg. That requires all state agencies to submit reports to the Legislative Budget Board to reduce their budgets by 1, 5, and 10%. Basically outline what they can do to save money. That one was accepted. It was acceptable to the author of the budget, and it was adopted. And if this makes it onto the final version, which, again, remains to be seen, this could have been something that would have been really, really important, especially ahead of, say, the economic slowdown that we saw right. in 2020, where state agencies were forced to look at, some state agencies were forced to look at ways that they could cut back. This would at least require that they have a plan going forward.
That's right. I mean, Abbott, this is almost a year ago now, right, had the ask. He kind of had this ask to agencies and said, hey, we're forecasting this, need you to look at potentially reducing your budgets. This is an amendment that's been offered before. Mm-hmm. It's never been successful, but if it was, you know, one, Abbott wouldn't have had to done that, and two, we would have already had that information potentially saving us some time.
Sure, so that's one. We're gonna see if that ultimately makes it on.
Right.
One battle that was really, really heavily hyped ahead of this budget debate by Democrats specifically was the idea of Medicaid expansion, expanding Obamacare in Texas. Leading up to this week, you had a bill by Democrat State Representative Julie Johnson that would actually expand Medicaid, would implement Obamacare in Texas, and it actually got a majority of authors, co-authors, majority of the House co-authoring it with the help of 9 Republicans. Right. So going into this debate yesterday on the budget, it looked like perhaps a budget amendment that would implement this Medicaid expansion would go through. And ultimately, for the most part, party line vote there.
That's right. There was only, ultimately when it came up, there was only one Republican that voted with Democrats, even though the amendment did fail. And that was Representative Lyle Larson, as a Republican from San Antonio, who was, of course, also a joint author, I believe, on Representative Julie Johnson's bill. I think what's also important to note about that, right, is that Democrats seemingly very publicly thought that, you know, this was their moment. They had the amendment was a Garnett Coleman amendment. It's a Democrat from Houston who's worked on Medicaid issues for upwards of the last few decades. And so he offered the amendment. He had a press conference yesterday morning where he was surrounded by Julie Johnson, another Democrat, and Bobby Garrett from the Valley, where he announced basically, these are our efforts. We have the votes. We're going to put it to a vote. And also seemingly, which I thought was interesting, is that the speaker allowed, right, that amendment to come up.
Yep.
And not only that, he kind of allowed Garnett Coleman, the author of the amendment, to speak for a lengthy period of time, introing why it is he's doing it. No interruptions from anyone on the back mic. Mm-hmm. There were no questions from anyone on the back mic. And they just had a vote. So he had this long kind of oratory, you know, sort of thing. And it definitely seemed like it was somewhat orchestrated and it was on their radar, right? Mm-hmm. So
yeah, certainly whenever you see something like that, you know, there's probably a little bit of planning behind the scenes that we didn't get a chance to see, but you see the end fruit where, okay, this debate's very orderly and they're being very, very polite, right, and not actually asking questions. And then of course, ultimately that amendment failed. One interaction that wasn't as orderly, however, was another amendment offered by, again, State Representative Jeff Kaysen, that would have said that schools can't offer, can't implement critical race theory. This is the controversial far left sort of program that a lot of schools are implementing, even here in Texas. He had an amendment that would stipulate that, you know, no funds can be used for that. And you had State Representative, a Democrat, Nicole Collier, coming out against it, offering a point of order, trying to kill the amendment. And, you know, the decorum sort of went out the window here. Take a look.
County.
Mr. Speaker.
Ms. Collier, for what purpose?
I raised a point of order against further consideration of the amendment under Texas House Rules of Procedure under Rule 8, Section 4, on the grounds that the amendment attempts to change general law through the appropriations bill and is downright evil.
Please bring your point of order down front.
Apparently, downright evil is now a cause for a point of order.
And you see a clip like that, I mean, it's maybe it sounds a little trite, but it's one of those situations where it seems like Democrats sometimes can get away with anything, sure, right? In the Texas House, they're not called out for their decorum. Ultimately, that amendment, though, interesting to note, that point of order where the Democrats said this can't be brought up, Speaker of the House Dade Phelan ultimately upheld that point of order, right, and killed the amendment right there. So we actually never got a vote on whether or not critical race theory should be allowed in classrooms.
It's always interesting because the two kind of rules that are adopted every budget debate or deliberation, one is about put and take, which I can get into if I need to, but the second, more applicable one to what we're talking about here, is the idea that you can't create general law in the budget, right? Which is, we saw all night the points of orders generally that were being called by Democrats, right, centered around that. And, you know, ultimately that's up to the discretion of the speaker on how he rules on all those points of order. And it was very obvious that, you know, they were being somewhat selective on what was making general law and not. Right?
I think as our boss here, Michael Quinn Sullivan, has said yesterday and likes to say a lot, those decisions, they are political decisions.
Absolutely.
Right? They're political decisions made by the speaker. And ultimately, you had a number of conservative amendments that weren't laid out. Some, for example, that would have prevented funds from going to illegal aliens. You had some other conservative amendments brought by State Representative Brian Slayton, some that would have prevented schools from engaging in kind of this child gender affirmation business and some other far left things. His amendments, I think he had at least two or three that were killed, struck down on points of order by Democrats and by Speaker of the House, Dade Phelan. And he actually took to the mic to go ask the speaker what was going on. Why were Democrat amendments that were very similar being allowed to go on, and his amendments were being killed? Here's the exchange.
Mr. Slayton, for what purpose?
Mr. Speaker, parliamentary inquiry.
Please state your inquiry.
On page 152, the Herrero Amendment. What was the ruling on that amendment?
Mr. Slayton, we have passed that amendment. Your inquiry is not in order.
Mr. Speaker, parliamentary inquiry.
Please state your inquiry.
Are you aware that on that Herrero Amendment, the same defense was used in the 85th session and just a few moments ago? They used the same defense. Are you aware, Mr. Speaker?
Mr. Slayton, rulings on points of order are not subject to debate.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Slayton.
My amendment was a cookie cutter version of the Herrero Amendment, and it received a different ruling. What about precedent?
So this is Kerry Cheshire and Tim Harden coming back to you doing a live broadcast.
Mr. Slayton, your inquiry is not in order.
Okay, Mr. Speaker, parliamentary inquiry.
State your inquiry.
We'll cover this in a
second. If a member uses the same defense as others, what is their recourse if they feel like, because they were ruled different than others, what is their recourse?
You may appeal the ruling of the chair.
Mr. Speaker, parliamentary inquiry.
Please state your inquiry.
How do you appeal that ruling? How does one appeal that?
You need 10 members to appeal the ruling of the chair.
Mr. Speaker, is there a deadline to turn in those 10 signatures?
You're welcome to come down and talk to the parliamentarians about that question.
Mr. Speaker, do I need to turn that in before we go to the next amendment, or would I have to, could I turn that in later in the day?
The ruling would have to be appealed before we move on to the next item of business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Well, ultimately, they moved on to the next amendment, and the amendment, the point of order, rather, was not appealed. I didn't have time to get those 10 signatures, I suppose. But Brian Slayton, really fighting last night, and really one of the conservative leaders in the Texas House right now. Speaking of, though, you talked about gender modification. You know, some of those Republican Party of Texas priorities that we keep coming back to, a couple of them had a chance to be heard in one form or fashion during the budget debate. One of those was school choice.
That's right. This is an amendment that's kind of generally expected, or has been the last few legislative sessions. It's always by the same author, seemingly. It's a Democrat state rep, Abel Herrero. Mm-hmm. And he offered an amendment that essentially would say, okay, none of the funds in the budget bill can be used for school choice effectively, mm-hmm. right? And there were some specifics there, but for school choice, ultimately, it's the only vote related to school choice that we've had, and that
probably are going to get.
That's likely true, and it failed. There were only 29 all Republican people that voted basically in favor of school choice on that.
It was 115-29
right.
On that vote, and pretty amazing. I mean, I said this: if you're an advocate for school choice, you have to think that, you know, there's a big disconnect right now. And look, it is a priority of the Republican Party of Texas. It means you had some significant number of grassroots supporting it. I think it was even approved pretty overwhelmingly on one of the Republican primary
ballot
propositions some time ago. And so, you know, this is one of those issues, right, where I think you really do see a big separation. And frankly, you look at the vote breakdown on this, I mean, 115-29, it's not too different than it was 4 years ago or 6 years ago when these similar amendments were brought. And so
it was interesting. Steve Toth, a Republican there from the Woodlands, got up when he spoke against this amendment. And he laid out, I thought, was a good case for, look, all the polling, right? And he talked about all the polling on the issue, even for people that identify as like independent, right, and everything, all over Texas. It was like 70% and up in favor of it. But obviously that didn't matter to an overwhelming number of people.
Wow. One other Republican Party of Texas priority that got some recognition yesterday was taxpayer-funded lobbying. You know, using taxpayer funds by governing taxing entities to go down to Austin and go lobby against, not many times, the interests of the citizens. Yvonne Davis, a Democrat, had an amendment that would have, that ended up, spoiler, did remove some language that prohibited funds from being directed to schools from being used to hire registered lobbyists. And how did that fare? I kind of spoiled it. It did pass.
Sure. It passed. It created kind of this one of very few tenuous moments, if you will, on the floor. And yeah, the way she laid it out was very interesting. But yes, ultimately it basically now that it's on, it says that schools can hire lobbyists, right, using taxpayer dollars. And that ended up getting on by, there was only 22 Republicans that voted against that, which is notable. Again, it's an RPT priority. So,
well, I mean, Thomas watching right now says it's amazing. Public institutions can use public funds to hire lobbyists. I think it's always amazing.
Sure.
But just to sort of put a pin on the budget stuff, those were the big highlights as far as amendments. And what was the vote on the ultimate thing?
Ultimately, they did both second and third reading in the same night, and it passed unanimously. Not a single person voted against the overall budget.
So we're going to be seeing it again, though. As we said, it's going to go to conference committee. They're going to iron out some of those details, reconcile the versions passed by the House and the Senate. And then both of the chambers, respective chambers, will vote on that final version to be sent to the governor's desk in the coming weeks, before the legislative session is done. I mean, but like you said, it's the one thing they have to do. So constitutional carry. Now, last week, and I was gone, but you and just time they passed it out of the chamber. Now it's over in the Senate, and there seems to be some real mixed messages on whether or not that bill is going to ultimately be passed by the Senate.
It's very odd. There's kind of a timeline of events, if you will, that's taking place. Like you said, it passed the House, 87, I think, in favor, 58 opposed. There's kind of been this lead up over the last week from activists asking, like, hey, where do individual senators stand on this issue? The lieutenant governor seemingly has been generally silent. Most members generally have been silent on it, with the exception of a few. Yesterday, Senator Charles Schwertner, Republican from Georgetown, filed a new bill, Senate Bill 2224. It was referred literally just a few minutes later to his own committee, the Senate Administration Committee, a committee he chairs. What's notable about that, a few things. One, it's past the bill filing deadline, which was March 12th.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's no rules in the Senate.
No, that's true. And the Senate can suspend whatever rules it pleases, seemingly, and they've done it before. It went to a completely different committee than the lone existing constitutional carry bill by Senator Drew Springer, Senate Bill 540. That bill got referred to the Senate State Affairs Committee back in early March, has yet to get a hearing. But this bill, Senator, very quickly this morning, that committee was created, and the House's version, House Bill 1927 by Representative Matt Schaefer, that passed last week, was referred to this newly found committee.
So you have three constitutional carry bills in three different committees in the Senate.
That's right.
No one knows if it's going to pass. It's enough to make your head spin trying to figure some of it out. Is this committee, I mean, when you look at the makeup of that committee, does it look targeted for success?
It's
targeted for success?
Sure. Right? Yeah. Yes and no. So this new committee is made up of a few people that have at least publicly come out in support of the idea of constitutional carry, right? That includes Senator Hall. It includes Senator Buckingham, both Republicans, Senator Buckingham from Lakeway, Senator Hall from Edgewood. That includes, Schwertner, of course, right, who filed his own version of the bill as well. It's a yet to be seen. We haven't necessarily seen anyone opine on the new committee and what the kind of the plan or idea is. But certainly, to your point, it is confusing as to why there's now three different versions of this bill in three separate committees. You know,
we'll be watching it and trying to make sense of it in the coming days or weeks ahead. Thank you so much, Jeremy, for explaining and going through all that for us. You've got This Week in Texas, most ledge days, briefly. What are we expecting coming up?
Sure. So we are in, like you said earlier, we're in the final under 40 days of the legislative session, which means a few things. One, like obviously we're like almost 75% the way done through the session.
Yep.
We're coming up on deadlines, which means the prospects for bills, especially in the House, that window is starting to tighten. And we're coming up on some self-imposed deadlines where they can't consider House bills anymore that aren't calendared. So, you know, the idea of the show is to give a preview of what's happening the day of, and we'll endeavor to do that as we kind of continue through the next few weeks. But expect that the calendars will start filling up and be hundreds of bills being deliberated as opposed to 20 and 30.
So. Excellent. Well, you can subscribe to those updates at texasscorecard.com or pretty much anywhere that free podcasts are sold. So check that out. That's This Week in Texas. I want to thank everybody for watching. I want to say hello. Steph, watching from Deer Park, always tuning in. Good to see you. Thomas, watching from Spring Branch. Jennifer from Smithville. Weston from the Alamo, Sherry watching from Fort Worth, and Tiffany as well watching from Deer Park. Thank you so much for joining us on today's edition of The Headline.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.